Welcome to The Family Doctor, Lessons Learned, Wisdom Shared. My name is Thomas White, and I am a family physician in North Carolina. In 2021, another North Carolina family physician, Dr. Lee Beatty, and I created this podcast with the vision of having conversations with fellow family physicians to get to know them better personally, to hear the lessons they have learned in their careers, and to allow them to share their wisdom. This is a collaborative effort with the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians. We very much appreciate the Academy supporting this and sharing this podcast on their website and in their monthly emails. We have no disclosures to share. We have no advertisers, and the podcast is provided for no compensation or other gain except our satisfaction that our colleagues, both young and old, will benefit in some way. We hope you will listen, learn, and feel wiser for doing so. We can be reached with feedback and questions at thefamilydoctorpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for joining us. Now let's listen to this month's family doctor, their lessons learned, and their wisdom shared. Think of that trusted, dependable family physician you had as a child, that physician who came to your house when you were sick, that physician you just knew would always be there when needed, that physician who went way beyond medicine, serving on boards, holding elected office, not because they had the spare time to do so, but because they felt the obligation to give back, that physician whose mother or father was probably also a community leader, a family physician, or a teacher, likely in the same town, because that is their DNA. That's just what that family does. Involved, caring, wise, committed. That physician is this month's guest on the Family Doctor podcast, Lessons Learned, Wisdom Shared. Dr. Mott P. Blair is not only Mott P. Blair IV, he is a fourth-generation primary care physician. He earned his bachelor's degree in biology from the University of North Carolina at Wilmington, his medical degree from the East Carolina University Brody School of Medicine, and completed his family medicine residency in Greenville. After residency, Dr. Blair joined his father to practice back in his hometown of Wallace. He has provided care in this same community since 1989, as the practice has evolved through the years from a small group to solo to now being part of Vidant Health Physicians Practice Network. In addition to his clinical responsibilities, he currently serves as a regional medical director for Vidant Health, as well as medical director for Population Health. Dr. Blair has been an active leader at the practice, community, health system, state, and national levels. Locally, he has served as a member of the Duplin County Board of Education, the County Parks and Recreation Board, and as a member and president of the Wallace Chamber of Commerce. He has held many leadership positions with the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians. During his year as president of the Academy, one of his priorities was childhood obesity. At the national level, Dr. Blair served as both alternate delegate and delegate to the AAFP's Congress of Delegates. He is a former member of the Committee on Rural Health and the AAFP Commission on Health of the Public, serving as its chair. Dr. Blair served on the board of directors for the AAFP from 2014 to 2017, and he remains active with the American Board of Family Medicine. Throughout his career, Dr. Blair has received many awards and accolades. He has received the North Carolina Academy of Family Physicians Community Teaching Award, the Distinguished Service Award, and the North Carolina Academy Family Physician of the Year in 2006-2007. He continues to teach medical students and residents in his family medicine practice in Wallace. He is married to Jennifer Tendall Blair, and they have three grown children. In his free time, Dr. Blair enjoys sailing his boat off the coast of Wilmington, North Carolina. Welcome, Dr. Blair.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a real compliment to join you today and speak about things that I love. And look forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you, Mott. You know, you and I have been waiting on this for quite a while. We had a few interruptions and delays, and I'm just so happy that we're able to make this work. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
So tell us how you've been. How's Jenny? How's your family?
Well, we're doing really well. We're just trying to get through the wintertime here. As you've said, I'm a summertime person since I love the water, but the family's doing well. My wife's doing well. She, as you know, is a nurse, and she works at the health department. She has been doing a lot of contact tracing with the COVID epidemic, and now that some of that is calming down, we hope, a little bit, she's doing pediatric care and really enjoys and passionate about her work. In addition, she does have time to spend with me, and we travel together when we get a chance. My children are all grown, which is a satisfying thing. But, you know, the children are a lot like being a family doc. It's really a cradle to the grave kind of experience. You know, they never leave, and we're really close. My oldest child is actually a 911 operator. She's bilingual. She enjoys her work. I think she comes to it a little bit from her medical background. And my middle child does disability determination. She is very detail-oriented. And, of course, she has the lingo, the medical lingo. She's been exposed to it all her life, so she understands that very well. My son, who's the youngest, he's 28, he's with Military Sealift Command. He's a third mate on the Navy ship down in the Persian Gulf. And he loves being at sea, and he loves his job as well. So we miss him. We hadn't seen him in a while, but he'll hopefully get relieved and come home soon.
Well, thank all three of them for their service, all contributing in huge ways. You know, both of my kids went into healthcare, and I never thought they would growing up. As many times as they rolled their eyes every time I got a phone call or went in a restaurant and somebody came up and asked me a question, I was pretty sure that they would not go into healthcare. Certainly not family medicine. So you probably had a similar experience raising your children.
Very much so. You know, they understood that life in a small town, particularly if you're a doctor, you're always on and really always working. But I think they got a lot out of that. And in certain ways, they're all doing healthcare in some indirect ways. And interesting enough, my son ends up being in charge of all the health related issues on board the ship. So he didn't fall too far from the tree. And then my girls obviously are connected to it in a way.
Right. No, your kids had great role models. So I know you're proud and you should be. I mentioned your childhood in the intro, and you know, we've had a number of folks on this podcast who talk a lot about their childhood, their role models, how they got interested in medicine. And we've had a number who actually went back to practice in their hometown. You're a good example of that. That's what I did, and a number of others. So talk a little bit about your childhood and what that was like, and how did you and when did you decide to follow in your family footsteps?
You know, it's interesting. I always thinking back, always wanted to be a doctor. We grew up in it, obviously, and we grew up in a little bit different time for healthcare. When I was growing up, for instance, there wasn't such a thing as an emergency room. And, you know, oftentimes people came to the house, and it wasn't unusual for my father, who was a doctor, to go out on house calls, really, at all hours of the night, or go down to the office and meet people. But he would often bring us along, actually. So, you know, I went on many a house call with him, and this, of course, days before HIPAA. So we would go out and visit homes. And it, to me, it was a real learning experience to see where people lived, the problems that they had. We learned a whole lot. You know, one of the favorite stories, we would oftentimes go out into the country. Some homes, you know, you wouldn't have driveways. You had to take a path to their house. I've used this before in talks, you know, that we're walking down a path. He'd always say, son, now let me tell you something. Don't step on a stick that moves. Obviously, you know, he means don't step on a snake. Obviously, it was not an unusual occurrence. Every now and then you would see one. But that wisdom kind of carried forward when we go forward. And he was a great influence on all of us. I have two siblings, an older brother who's a family physician, and then my oldest sister who's a pediatrician. And we all went into primary care. Basically, on his mentorship and having witnessed that as children growing up. My mother was a school teacher, and she later went back as a guidance counselor. Always, when I went into high school, I always say, you know, she could get us all through what we went through. She'd be a great guidance counselor for anybody. So she was a wonderful lady.
Those house calls that you made. I guess we couldn't do that today, right? I don't think I could take my grandson out, but I used to take my kids to the nursing home, the hospital. Early, I think they enjoyed it at first, and then I think eventually they got tired of waiting on me. But it was good exposure because they learned about their community.
I think that, you know, interesting, the time where we made house calls, and even when I went out into practice early on, I did a lot of house calls. And I always enjoyed that because you went in someone's home, you learned a lot about your patients just by the environments in which they live and their home and the people around them. And it was always a really close area to talk with folks. I was glad I got that experience and got to enjoy it. A lot of house call stories, though, but one of my favorite stories that my dad would tell, he used to do home deliveries, which is unheard of now, but he would go out and he kept a cot in the back of the car, and he would go out, and if it was out in the country, and back then you could be pretty far out in the country, and it was too far to come back, he would set the cot up and take a nap while he was waiting on labor to progress. So he goes out this one home one time out here in way out here in the country, in DuPage County, in Pender County. And as he gets there, he's pulling his cot out, and the father-to-be, he's talking with him, says, "Do you have any children?" He says, "Yes, I've got two daughters." He said, "But I've always wanted to have a boy." And he says, "Well, that's wonderful." Lo and behold, when the baby starts to crown and he hears this loud bang outside the window, goes forward to complete the delivery. And as you will remember with deliveries, you be very, very careful when you cut the cord, particularly when it's a male, because you don't want to cut the wrong thing, right? So he delivers this male infant, and he goes outside the house, and the man comes running up, and he's excited. He just goes, "I've got him, I've got him, I've got him." And my dad looked at the man and says, "You're right." He said, "You've got your boy." And the man looks at him, he says, "No, I shot the bear." So wonderful story about living out in the country, and a lot of people out there named for him that he did deliveries for.
Well, and you came back. Well, you came back to your hometown around the same time I did. I think I came back in 88. You came back in 89. Any hesitancy about doing that?
No, I always. He's sort of was in the twilight of his practice, and he really kept his practice open so that I could return and start up. And I'll never forget the first week I came in there, and he called me back to his office. He said, "Son, it's all yours. Now, if you have any questions, let me know." And essentially just gave the practice to me and was there if I had questions, and let me sort of go ahead and ride the bicycle and learned by doing, but I certainly leaned on him for a lot of advice. I learned the value of what it's like to practice for a long time in the community. I'll never forget this. I went in to see a man one day, and the chief complaint was, I'm dizzy. And so I, coming out of residency and all that training, did the full workup, you know, full neurological workup, and talked with him. Spent about 30 minutes with this man. And I made my diagnosis, came out, and came into the lab. And we had this lab where we were across from one another. And he looks over at me. He said, did you see Mr. So-and-so? And I'm like, yes, I did. He looks at me. He says, was he dizzy? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, he was. I said, how did you know? He said, son, that man's been dizzy for 25 years. But I learned the value of getting to know your patients over time. And that was a good lesson in it right there.
Right. I think we've known patients like that. Maybe they just need time with us. They don't really need a new diagnosis, right? So you came back in 89, and you were doing full scope, I imagine, right? When you came back to practice?
Yeah, I finished. I actually started out in 90, broken up there a little bit, and started with him then. And we practiced together for another 9 years. He passed away in 99, which was the year of Hurricane Floyd. He practiced before Floyd came through and died a little prematurely. And but it was a great time to practice together. I learned a whole lot, a lot of medicine that time.
Did you do obstetrics in practice?
I did not get that opportunity. You know, obviously trained in it, and I did it in residency, and I don't regret that at all. I think that this always comes up, you know, should we train in obstetrics? And I'm like, yeah, you know, because I use that to this day when I see patients, because a lot of pregnant patients come in to see you for other issues, and it's, I think, invaluable to have that training.
Right. So, Mike, you and I have done – we've been in a lot of discussions about expanding the primary care workforce, getting medical students interested in family medicine, and then getting family physicians to locate in areas of need. And some, you know, that can be inner city, it can be wherever, but it's particularly in small towns. And I've often felt like we need to grow our family physicians, that, you know, if we can get someone from our hometown interested in medicine, then interested in family medicine, we've got a lot greater chance of getting them back home than with the usual recruiting techniques. What are your thoughts on that today? And how's Wallace done? You got any young high school or college students that look like they may be coming back?
You know, it's interesting. A great question. I mean, it's kind of a funny comment. I think I talked to someone one day who said the way to get a doc is to have them move to your community, get a home mortgage, and then marry a spouse locally, and you've got them forever, right?
Right.
but I'm not so sure that's a great recruitment strategy. I think the strategy is wraps around two things that you've said. I think number one, we know that we need to train docs from the community in which they grew up. They will come back and take care of the population in a culturally appropriate manner, and that means that we have to put a wide net, and we need to encourage folks to go into the healthcare. And we need to capture that group of people at a very, very young age. I think maybe going back into junior high school, encouraging the sciences, encouraging students, exposing them to healthcare. I also believe, and there's a lot of work been done around this, is you do practice where you train, right? So the effort towards developing community residencies, whether they're teaching health centers, And now ECU Health actually has a residency program here in the county in Beulahville. And Dr. Danny Pate, who you may well know as a family physician, it's out of his practice with Goshen Medical Center. That is a great way to get new docs into a community is train them where they will practice. And we've got several residents in that program. So I'm excited about the possibility of getting new doctors, particularly ones that have been trained locally. When you train in a big city, that's what you know. You don't tend to go out to a rural area and leave that if you do your training in those places. So I think we're on the way to maybe solving that issue. Obviously, those issues require funding and require commitment, particularly from governmental bodies, to make that happen. So that I believe that is one of the solutions for us in rural areas.
Right. Mark, let me ask you about something that's it's been on my mind quite a bit many times in my career, and that's the challenge of going back practicing in your hometown, your community, and then going through that experience of death and dying with friends and people you grew up with and their parents and older individuals you knew as a child. And I'll be honest, that maybe more than anything has been the biggest challenge for me in my career. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I agree with you. That is hard. I mean, I think when I first went into practice, my dad pulled me aside and he said, "Son, you're going to bury a lot of people." And I thought for a minute, "What are you trying to tell me? I'm not that bad of a doctor?" But what he was actually saying is that you are going to take care of patients through their lives, particularly people you've known, and you will attend their funerals. And that's a hard thing to do, but it's, and he said, "You'll carry a lot of coffins." You know, that is true. But you know, you get to know people through the years, and you have that familiarity and they know you and they trust you. I think that's a great honor and a great way to kind of commit your life's work. So I think it is difficult, particularly you know people so well. Right. One thing I found is that I was a little nervous about it at first, but people had a familiarity. So when I came home, there were two Dr. Blairs, you know, my dad and myself. So patients started referring to me by my first name. So I was referred to as Dr. Mott, still, which is my first name. And to this day, people still call me Dr. Mott. Now, I knew I had arrived when I got a referral letter back from a specialist, and it was addressed to Dr. Mott, Wallace, North Carolina. I still got it.
Dr. Mott.
Yes, yeah, Dr. Mott.
And it got to you anyway, right?
Correct. Yeah. But there was a real compliment in that there's a certain amount of familiarity and a certain amount of being comfortable that they could call you doctor and use your first name. And I like that.
Right. Well, you also touched on something that I think is really important, and that is attending funerals. We are asked to be pallbearers. Important, you know, to reach out to families, call them, visit them after someone passes away. That's a privilege. It can be emotionally draining, but it sounds like that's been a big part of what you've done in your practice.
It is a privilege. And, I have seen, we've had some other physicians join us, and particularly fresh out, and that's really difficult for them to face, which is saying goodbye to their patients. Right. It's hard.
Right. Really hard.
When you get the paper, back in the days of the paper chart, you know, to me, there was always that sense of sadness when you close that chart and you wrote deceased over the cover of the chart. It was sort of a closure, and you hold this chart in your hand and you realize this is that person's whole life embodied within this paper document. at least a part of it, and a certain amount of sadness in that.
Absolutely. How have you taken care of yourself as a practicing physician? I mentioned that sailing was one of your hobbies and passions, and how else have you balanced your time between work and family and just taking care of Dr. Mott?
I love sailing. You know, I learned how to sail down at a Methodist camp down on Deuce River. It's called Donnelly Center. We used to go every year. They had a family camp, and when I was a little boy, we would go as a family. And I'll never forget the person who taught me how to sail. Her name was Rosalie Ward. She's one of the most patient people in the world. But I was a little boy, and she put me in this little pram, which is a little tiny boat. There wasn't any wind that day, and she's standing in waist-deep water, and she pushed the boat, you know, out. And we would practice our tacking maneuvers, or turning the boat is what it's called, and would come back. And, you know, boy, how little did I know that this person was pushing me off to a horizon of just kind of a lifelong joy. And, you know, to me, that tells me how important it is to be a great teacher and mentor. You never know when you touch somebody's lives. So developing an avocation like that, where I could go out and go out on the water, it just literally, as soon as you leave the shore and the waves are lapping against the boat and the wind is in the sail, I just feel myself calming down and feel that sort of serenity and peacefulness. On a really windy day, sometimes it's not so peaceful, but it's challenging and it's enjoyable. What we've done always is involve our children. Even when we travel, my family's always gone with me. So when I have a meeting, I would bring people along, and we've spent time together on those meetings to make sure that part of my life is not being neglected. And then we would always do things together, which was always a lot of fun and still is, actually.
Right. So this confession time, Mott, were you ever tempted to take your beeper? A lot of people who listen to this don't know what a beeper is, but maybe they can Google it if they don't know. But you ever tempted to throw your beeper in the water off the sailboat?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that's one of my colleagues or friends actually, I was out sailing and he sails as well, and he was a physician as well. And he actually had the thing with him in a plastic bag, and I'm like, oh man, you've just got your priorities all wrong here.
Yeah. Better to let that thing sink, right?
Correct.
And still take care of your patients.
That's right.
Yeah. Ma, let's talk a little bit about your involvement in politics. Not to become partisan, but you've had a lot of experience in politics, and I think probably most all family physicians, they get involved in a community of any size. Yep. And they get involved and they think about running for school board or Congress or mayor. Give us some little pearls on that, things to watch out for, benefits. Give us a little your wisdom on serving in elected office.
And I'm glad you bring that up. I've always had very strong feelings about doctors in politics. I think that it's an extension of what we do. It is sort of, it's a worn out old saying, but you know, it's the old saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that's true for our patients as well. So it's important to engage in that process in some way at which you feel comfortable. That may mean be involved, run for office, either local office or statewide office or national office. It might mean supporting a candidate or just dropping them a note in the mail or an email about something that you feel strongly for. I think that's really a very, very important lesson to learn. And to me, it was more hands-on and being engaged in the process. And I believe no matter what side of the aisle you sit on, I think it's a great thing when we see physicians step forward and serve in that capacity. So I'm always happy when a doc runs for office. You know, we docs make good politicians, I think, in one sense. You know, we love talking to people. We love listening to people, which is critical. And as a family physician, you know, we are trained listeners. And maybe it's a stumbling block for us, but as physicians, family physicians, we tell the truth, you know, which may not always be a good attribute for a successful politician, but it's important to be truthful with the public, and it's important to do the right thing for people. So having that voice, it doesn't matter. I mean, it really matters what happens on Jones Street and what happens in the Capitol as to what happens to our patients and our communities and neighborhoods. So it's really worthwhile spending time with that. And I would encourage any doc who's thinking about it, give it some thought. It's a worthwhile endeavor. It's a sacrifice, but it is kind of a part of what you do.
Right. Very, very well said. So here's a tough question for you before we take a break in a minute. If you had not become a family physician, Mott, do you think you would have become an admiral in the Navy, or do you think you'd be governor today? Which of the two? Because I think it's one or the other.
Yeah, that's a real high compliment. You know, being a man of the water and really wanting to serve, I think I would probably be drawn more towards the water. And certainly the Navy hits it. I enjoy the discipline and the commitment that would probably go in that direction. But I wouldn't turn down the governorship. But I think the Navy would probably be a little more accurate.
Okay. Well, that's a fair answer.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Mott Blair a little more about his career, where he is in his practice, and really focus on the lessons he's learned during his years in practice. So we'll be back shortly. As we pause for a moment, it's a good time to remember the words of Henry David Thoreau. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. This month and every month, we will talk to a family physician who has truly seen and not just looked, who has genuinely listened and not just heard. Family physicians from whom we will learn and hopefully become wiser ourselves. We hope you are enjoying this episode. Thanks for listening, and thanks to the NCAFP for their support. Now, let's get back to the podcast. Okay, welcome back to our podcast, The Family Doctor, Lessons Learned, Wisdom Shared. We are talking with Dr. Mott Blair today from Wallace, North Carolina, longtime leader in the North Carolina Academy, the American Academy, and a physician in his community for many, many years. Welcome back, Dr. Blair.
Thanks. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit of where you are now with your practice. We're close to the same age, so we're probably having some similar considerations. Where are you with things?
Well, I have no avocation to want to retire at this point. I'm as busy probably as I've ever been. I still see patients regularly in the office here. I also do population health, which I find extremely challenging and in a lot of ways very satisfying because we're working to improve care overall for a population of people. And that's an extremely challenging effort, particularly in Eastern North Carolina, where we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, particularly economic as well as health disparities and inequities. So I'm really enjoying this work, and to me is extremely satisfying. And it's an extension of everything I've done so far. I feel prepared to kind of work around these areas.
I know in my career and today, you know, I tend to think of think in terms of an N of one. You know, I go in the exam room and it's an N of one. Now it's a family, a neighborhood, a community. We think broadly, where does this patient come from? But we still are trained and think of patients as individuals. So it takes a little different mindset, doesn't it, to think in terms of population health, because we've been so focused on that individual health.
It does. And I think that what you learn is that you can concentrate areas that really have an incredible impact. And when you do it well, you really save lives and you improve overall care, which is really important, and improving quality of care as well. There's a lot of improvement can be done in America's healthcare. And one of the ways we could do that is by focusing on value and focusing on improving overall care and improving quality. So it's exciting work to me. And there are lots of challenges, a lot of moving parts in America's healthcare, in a lot of ways that I think we can make it better for everybody.
Well, that role you're playing now, that's a nice extension from what you've done in your whole career.
That's right. And it's interesting, you know, if when I left medical school or residency, I would have never dreamed that I would have done all the things that I've done. And it, to me, it's really exciting to look back on it and see the twists and turns that your career takes. And I don't know who said this, but I think it's true. Everything you do prepares you for the next step. It's true. And I found that to be true for every step of my career along the way. It's been very helpful.
Right. We don't always know how the dots will connect, but they generally do, right?
They do. Everything seems to fall in place eventually. You know, that's part of the adventure of it, right? It becomes very exciting. And the important thing, I think, is to learn along the way. It is keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and learn along each step of the way.
Yeah. Every exam room doorknob is a new adventure, right?
It's funny. Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny. My dad used to say that. Said, behind every door is a surprise. And that is true. And I found that to be true in my career.
Right, right. Regardless of the chief complaint.
Yep.
Right. So there's a lesson to be learned. Share with us some of the other lessons. I know you've given this a lot of thought. And what would you like to share with your colleagues, and particularly those younger listeners who are tuning into this to hear Mott Blair's wisdom?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think what I have learned is the value of mentorship is incredibly important. And, you know, you tend to think of that as when you're younger, but I've found as I get older, my mentors are even more valuable when I'm weighing out decisions and thinking about direction, or even just getting some kind wisdom. That has become very, very valuable to me. We were talking about earlier, Jim Jones, for instance, one of the great family doctors in our state, is a mentor of mine. And we just went over to Greenville and celebrated his career with his professorship named after him. And they named the executive suite in the Family Medicine Center after Jim Jones. He's been tremendously impactful on my career. And I've learned a lot from him, and I still bend Jim's ear periodically when I need some kind advice. He's very good to give it. I've learned, you know, that you have more than one, obviously, and I've learned a lot of other lessons. I had the opportunity to serve on the American Academy of Family Physicians board, and that was a great experience for me. I learned a lot about our specialty. I learned a lot about how we represent ourselves to the rest of the world. You probably know him. Doug Henley was the executive director when I was on. Right. He has an interesting story. He originally started as a medical student, and he rotated with Hervey Cornegay, who's a family doctor in the northern end of our county, a little town called Calypso. And Dr. Cornegay inspired him to go into family medicine. And ultimately, he went into family medicine, became our state president, and then later our national president, and then served as the executive director for a long, long time of the American Academy, which represents us as association across the country. And you know, believe it or not, he inspired his boys a lot. Most of his boys went into healthcare, medicine, except for one who's a math teacher. Two of them are our hospitalists who I work with on occasion, and they're wonderful because they understand the challenges for a family doc having grown up in the same environment. But Dr. Henley really taught me a lot about professionalism, particularly on that board. Particularly, we were very, very careful about wearing a dress code because we are representing our specialty not only to other docs, but other organizations across the country. Our discipline was very, very good. You know, he always said, you know, if you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, you know, it's inexcusable, right? But one of the wisdom advice I got from him, until proven otherwise, assume best intent, because most people have best intent in mind. I've always liked that, particularly in political circles or even in circles where you're discussing ideas or issues maybe you don't agree with. Perhaps our whole society could learn a little bit from that, because there's different views, and you need to listen to those views and always assume the best intent. He always went by that. I always thought that was particular wisdom for up-and-coming folks to kind of go by. And until proven otherwise, assume best intent, because most people have best intent in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my mentors, and I've been thinking a lot about this, he had been in practice in the western part of the state, outside of Charlotte, a small community, Monroe. And he pulled me aside one day. He said, "Marty," he said, "I'm going to tell you something." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "I'm going to tell you a lesson I've learned." I said, "What is that?" He said, "Listen to your inner voice." He said, "Never ignore your inner voice. If your inner voice tells you something, listen to it. Do it." He said, "Every time I've ignored my inner voice, I've been burned." Hmm. And certainly in healthcare, whether it's in taking care of patients or even in conduct and work with people, if your inner voice is telling you something, pay attention to it, heed it. You know, it might be in a patient care situation. I tell my medical students this. Sometimes your inner voice tells you, "Oh, maybe you need to get this test, or maybe you should do that." Call it divine intervention, diagnostic acumen. Maybe it's your observations you're not consciously aware of, but listen to it, because it more than likely is right. That was some of the best advice that I've ever received. And you know, my dad, he was in practice forever, and he always told the story. It's a great story. He out on a call again, but this time I think his best friend, who was a dentist, was with him, and they were driving down the road. And they came across a lady who's waving her arms furiously. And so they stop, two gentlemen, right? And he looks, and she's got a shovel. And he looks over, and there's a fence. And underneath the fence is a pig. And he's kind of dug up underneath the fence, and he's stuck there. She's been using a shovel trying to dig the pig out, obviously. So my father, being the gentleman, goes, takes the shovel, and he starts digging. And as he digs around the snout of the pig just wiggles in even more and gets more and more stuck. And so his friend, who's the dentist, comes over to him and snatches the shovel away from him and says, "You doctors think you know everything." He takes the shovel and with the flat part of the shovel hits the pig on the snout, and the pig backs up out from underneath the fence after giving out a loud one. But to him, what I always call the great lesson of humility, it's important to be humble. We don't know everything, and a good lesson for us all to learn. So those are always sort of lessons I've learned. And I found that, you know, I've had opportunity to do a lot of public speaking through the years, and a nerve-wracking event for most normal people. But one thing I've discovered is that the words will always come to you. And, you know, when you're up there, and you've probably experienced this as well, they just seem to come to you. You'll know what to say when the time comes. And I've always found a lot of comfort in that. So a lot of life lessons, but I think it's important to have a mentor, and even more importantly, for us to remember to be mentors to other people. That's just as important.
You know, Mott, one theme I'm hearing in all that is this, the importance of listening. Listening to your mentors, listening to your inner voice, of course, listening to your patients, even the ones that give you a symptom they've had for 25 years, you still, that day, you listened intently and you respected their complaint and you pursued it. But a lot of what you're talking about is listening to others and listening to yourself. I think you said that so well. We, I think we should pride ourselves on our intuition. I think that's what makes family physicians special. I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg, if it's what draws us to family medicine, or we cultivate that. But that that intuition is so important.
And I agree with you. You know, I think the longer you do this, I think you can get better at it. And you know, there is an art of medicine, and I think that's one of them. It's learning those talents, and it's challenging, but you get better with it with time.
Right. I love that you mentioned humility. I thought a couple of years ago to myself, I thought, you know, Tom, you've been doing this so long, you've seen everything at least once. You just sort of need to remember when you saw it last. And then I started realizing, no, I still see new things, learn new things. Medicine humbles you every day, doesn't it?
It does. I was, you know, struck by that comment. We had a doc in the town next to us. In fact, my practice partner here practiced with him for a long time before he passed. And so us then younger doctors would always want to go in and brag about, "Oh, I saw this case or that case." And Dr. Boyette, Ed Boyette's a wonderful diagnostician. And he would look over, "Oh, yeah, I've seen about five cases of that." You know. Then he would detail all how the treatment had changed through the years and what he'd done. It was always funny.
Right. So talk a little bit about family medicine. You offer a very unique perspective, having served on the AAFP board. You've been at that table. You've seen our specialty and what it represents. What do you think about our future? And what should we do? What should we do about family medicine? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, that's funny. That's, you know, when I got married, in fact, my wife and I got married in our home, and we did a home wedding, so we did it in the living room. And so there wasn't an aisle like you typically have in the church. So the minister pronounced us man and wife. And my wife looks up at the minister and she says, you know, it was just kind of an awkward moment. But she looks at the minister, "Well, where do we go from here?" And the minister looks down and he says, "Well, the hard part is just starting." But we always thought that was funny. But we are kind of at a, it is like art. It gets harder the further along you get into it. But the question is, where do we go here? And I believe we have a very bright future. And I'll tell you why. I think what we're seeing in America right now is this whole, what one author recently wrote, is the Amazonation of healthcare. That is, it is becoming very transactional in a lot of ways. But the strength that we have is that it's very relational. And we have very relational kind of activities, and we are continuous over time. When I work within value-based care, what you find is that one of the real critical success points is starting to become clear is continuity. It is working with that group of patients over time that really makes a tremendous difference in my mind. And so I think we have a very, very valuable thing to offer in that we offer that kind of continuity over time. And we offer that relationship point that is not transactional. Transactional works for certain things, but over time, I think relational is going to trump that in a lot of respects. And I think that's what patients will like over time. One day I was sitting in my office when I was in my old office, and I heard an ambulance, and it got louder and louder, and the siren, and I turned to my nurse, Annette, and I said, "Annette, did somebody call the ambulance?" She said, "No," and it got louder and louder. It was outside the office. Well, in the ambulance was one of our longtime patients. And he refused to go anywhere. He was actually having a stroke, cerebral vascular event. He refused to go anywhere until they took him by our office. And we told him that that's what he needed.
Wow.
And that points to that relational aspect of healthcare and participating in people's care and helping them make decisions about their care. We may not be able to do some of the things that need to be done, but the piece I think that is really powerful is that relationship. So I think we have a very, very strong future in America's healthcare for that basis alone. We do have challenges.
Yeah, I think that we hear and we use that term a lot. Your trusted advisor in healthcare.
Right.
That's that guy in the ambulance, right?
That's right. It didn't take but 30 seconds to say, you need to go to the hospital.
Right.
But he felt good about that.
Right.
I do believe that, there are certain emerging technologies. We do need to be open-minded and embrace those things. We need to bring that into the fold of what it is we do. Telehealth, for instance, we probably need to embrace that. There are ways that we can extend what it is we do. Team-based care, for instance, I think is incredibly important to practice in teams and be a team leader, but have teams help deliver care. But it still comes down to relationships.
Mott, you have you've shared so much. I listen to this, and I hope that we can get this podcast, this interview with you out to many, many students and residents and physicians who are in practice, young and older. You're one of those consummate family physicians. You've been a great role model and mentor to me. And I just want to thank you for doing this today. It's been superb.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks for having me on your podcast. It's wonderful to talk. And we literally could talk family medicine probably the rest of the week. I would be happy with that. I love what I do. And I know you love what you're doing. And your patients, your talent, they're lucky to have you.
Well, Mott, thanks again. And I'm going to I'm going to share a quote. Always like to look for a quote that I can sort of pin on someone, and it helps me remember them, and I hope it helps our listeners remember them, and I hope it's inspirational for folks. And I found one for you that I think we've all heard it 1,000 times, but I couldn't find one better. And it was by Winston Churchill, who, if you want to find a good quote about anything, go to Churchill. He said, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give." And you've given so much to your community, your family, your patients, family medicine, and you've made a great life. Thanks for sharing some of that with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a real joy. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mott. Join us next month when we will talk with another amazing family physician to hear their lessons learned and benefit from the wisdom they share. Until then, take good care of yourself and those you love.